Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo. You're listening to HR Educational Radio. We're going to welcome to the show today Eric Bailey. He's the best-selling author and president of Bailey Strategic Innovation Group. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, David. Glad to be here.
No, I'm really glad to have you on. Appreciate it. I've seen you on a couple of keynotes in different places and strategic HR and so forth. You know, tell me what's going on in the HR world here in the early part of 2022.
Well, the main thing is actually before the pandemic started, there was a bunch of research and studies that were done that we are the most lonely we've ever been as a society. Employees are lonely because they're not connecting with folks. But then we leverage that into a pandemic where there's, you know, quote unquote, social distancing. And so we're getting to this place in the HR space where connectivity is the number one thing that we need. And there are so many different avenues right now. We're talking a lot right now in diversity, equity, and inclusion. The key of that is the inclusion and belonging piece, because that leverages back to understanding each other. A lot of folks are trying to understand how communication works, because that's something we've been dealing with for decades and never really cracked. So that's what the top things we're seeing right now in the space is belonging, inclusion, and communication.
You know, it's funny you say that. And I do think communication has always been a big topic, right? It's a huge world and it means so much such a different thing to different people. Let's be honest with that, right? Mm-hmm. Everything from human touch to human clues to, you know, to everything that goes inflection, tone, you go right down the line. And I do think that one of the challenges has been, even though video has been great, like on Zoom and all that, it's, you know, it's funny. I went to a conference and I said, oh my God, you're 3D now. Look at that, right? You know, you're 3D. And they would laugh and they go, no, it's just good to see people. Yeah. And there is an element today, whether it's, you know, somebody who's been in the workforce a long time or just someone new, they feel like they have lost that connectivity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's surprising how big of an impact it is, you know. And one of the things that I focus on is the brain science of human connection. So brain science isn't a real science; it's really a collection of other sciences. So there's neuroscience and psychology and linguistics and anthropology and all that. And so one of the things that we've seen is that one of the most important brain chemicals for connection is oxytocin. And they started to realize, well, why are we getting so tired on all these Zoom calls all the time? Well, we actually found out that it's impossible to look somebody in the eye in a Zoom call. It's impossible, because when you're looking, like you're looking at their eyes, you know, you're looking down. But if you want to make them feel like you're looking at them, you have to look right at a camera. And so, but you're not getting there looking at your eyes. So it's this whole thing. When we make eye contact with people, we're actually, our brains are releasing oxytocin. And so there is an intentional connectivity piece, just being face to face, that we're not getting in this virtual world. And then another side note, when we're on this video all the time, our picture is up, right? And we are not designed to be monitoring our own image this much, right? That's not how our species is designed. You know, we look in a mirror, maybe in the morning, maybe in the evening, but for the most part, we're looking at other people. But here in the Zoom world, our picture's up all the time. And we're like, you know, whether we try to or not, we're staring at it, looking at it. But what we find is that in the real world space, the 3D space, we're able to connect. We're going to read so much more body language from people, hear that inflection, or just make that oxytocin connection. And it's pretty powerful.
Well, now we're going to be obviously talking about your book, The Cure for Stupidity, Using Brain Science to Explain Irrational Behavior at Work. Mm-hmm. First of all, I got to tell you, if you actually have the actual cure for stupidity, I expect you to surpass Elon Musk in wealth value in about a nanosecond. I just want you to know that. Okay. Just want you to know the cure for stupidity. So tell me about the book a little bit.
Yeah. So it is, there is the cure for stupidity, but the play on it is our natural reaction is to look at this and say, I want to cure them. I want to cure their stupidity. Because what we do all the time is we're judging other people. You know, we're judging them for this or that, making bad decisions, making wrong assumptions or whatever. And we make those judgments that that reaction or behavior was stupid. And what I want to do is cure that. What I propose is that the judgment we're making is the cause of the stupidity, right? So not saying that they did it right or wrong. So removing the judgment, they just did a thing. And if we don't judge them as stupid, then they are no longer stupid. And so we would have cured stupidity. And the cure part of this is that we spend so much time in our lives being frustrated by other people. Like people who do things, cut us off in traffic, we're frustrated. People make the wrong decision at work, we're frustrated. They don't turn in their employee reviews, we're frustrated. And we judge everyone else's behavior. It causes us angst and frustration. And when you start to understand some of this, the brain science behind why people behave what I call irrationally, it releases that pressure, and we spend less time being frustrated, and life is so much easier. So, you know, there's a number of principles that we go through of how to understand why people behave the way that they do, especially when it doesn't jibe with how we would react.
Well, that's a good tease up for the second segment that we're going to talk about that. But let's talk a little bit about the general overall understanding of why people behave the way they do. Let's say a little foundational piece here, if you could. Mm-hmm. You know, why do people, and I hear this all the time, I know you know it as well. And by the way, of course, we're talking with Eric Bailey, and we're talking about the book, The Cure for Stupidity. Tell me about why people think this way. Humans are humans. We think about ourselves first. Right. And so is there a reason we could change that some way, or is that just how we're built?
Well, so change is really difficult. What we found is that the first thing you can do is become aware of these kind of principles, the reactions that you have, the way in which you're interpreting the world. I mean, there is some reasons, right? There's the brain scientists have discovered, neuroscientists have discovered that through our senses, sight, sound, touch, taste, and hearing, we take in the equivalent of about 10 million or 11 million bits of information every second. That's a lot of information coming at our brains every second, but we can only consciously process about 50 bits. So if you kind of add that all up, about 99.99995% of all of our brain's processing is unconscious. There's just too much information flying at us. And so to make sense of the world and make sense of what's happening, we have to take shortcuts. We have to jump to conclusions. We have to assume that what we just saw is going to continue in the future. Right. So when you drive to work, you get into autopilot because your brain, there's just too much information. Your brain needs to offload something. And so if you look at most of our lives, a lot of it is just expecting what we've seen in the past to continue into the future. And so when you see someone, let's say, clench their jaws or, you know, kind of get tense. And then that person, let's say when you're in high school, that person then starts yelling at you. Right. Well, you get to work and someone does this, they clench their jaws and they clench their fists and you start to expect that they're going to yell and you say, whoa, you need to calm down. Maybe not realizing that that's maybe the way that person thinks. I don't know, making something up. Right. But we start to expect things to happen in the future the way that we've seen them in the past. It's reliable, but it also can lead us to errors in judgment of other people.
You know, it's interesting. We've talked, I know I've heard, and I'm sure you haven't talked about biases, right? And biases bias, I think I heard you say it, or maybe I've heard it somewhere else. You can take credit if it was you. Bias is not a bad word. Yep. In the sense that as if you didn't have it, you'd be dead. Like right. That's part of it, that's right? It. I mean, that's correct. It. I think you mentioned, explain that a little bit, because I think that's an important piece of this equation here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of people, when you say, you know, what is bias? They'll say, oh, bias equals the isms, the sexism, ageism, racism, homophobia, all the isms. But that's not what bias means. Bias is actually a psychology term that means some kind of preconceived notion about someone or something based on information that we have, that we perceive to have, or that we lack. That's it, right? These preconceptions, the kind of definition goes on, are tools that the brain uses to make sense of what it is seeing. Because, you know, we have these to make sense of the world around us. As you said, yeah, if we did not have biases, we would not have survived as a species, right? We avoid unknown red berries because of bias, because back when we were cavemen and cavewomen, right, we'd saw our friends eat or other animals eat unknown red berries and die, right? And so we learned, oh, don't eat those, don't eat unknown red berries. And it's kind of built into us. And we start to use these sorts of biases to leverage our ability to move faster and think faster. These aren't bad things. Bias is not bad. Now, it can lead to bad outcomes, right? We can use our biases and then make behavior choices that can be bad and judged as bad. But bias by itself is not a bad thing. And so when you start to accept that I have biases and explore what those biases are, now you can start to choose different kinds of behaviors. Like if I were to ask you, you know, David, go ahead and pick up a pencil and start writing your name, right? You would pick it up with your dominant hand. If you're like most people, you pick it up with your right hand. That's a bias. Or you could have picked it up with your other hand. You could have chosen differently, but you choose your bias. It's easier. It's more natural. But that's the thing. You can switch hands and write with your non-dominant hand. It's just uncomfortable. It's awkward. You can choose behaviors outside of your bias. And that's the thing. It's like changing that judgment from good, bad to accepting the awareness of bias is something that's a part of us. Now we can have a different kind of conversation.
You know, when you're talking about people's biases or people's perceptions of mm-hmm. how things are, how much do external factors play into this? So I'm not only talking about history, how you grow up or all the generations and all that. I think of today in 2022, beginning of the year, you have all this noise about things that are going on about racial, about political, you can go through the list, right? Every ism you want is all over the news. And other than the fact I'd like to shut it all off, don't we all? There are days we just, I remember my dad, he was in his 80s, and he said, you know, if you don't watch the news, life's great. And there's some truth to that. But, you know, how much does that affect you on a daily basis or put you in an emotional state that makes it difficult?
You know, there's kind of a, if you think about the economics, there's the microeconomics and macroeconomics. There's kind of a micro answer to that and a macro answer to that. And so, news organizations are advertising organizations. Like the purpose of news, I mean, this is share news, but also the way they make money is through selling advertisements. So they want as many people watching as possible. If you think about TV shows, they call it sweeps week, when all the advertisers are looking to see what, you know, which shows are the best. And so where they're going to put their advertising dollars. So they put their best, most dramatic cliffhangers or whatever. Well, that's what the news is doing. So there's a story about, you know, a cat in a tree, or there's a story about, you know, someone getting horribly hurt in a car accident. Well, the news is going to put the car accident because that's going to make people watch. And so there's a lot of sensationalization. There's a lot of emotion built into that news. And so if you can, right, gather your news from an unbiased source or just the good and the bad and kind of reporting, great. But just be aware that a lot of times there's going to be a pull to your emotion. And that can have an effect on the way in which you see the world. Now, that's the micro, right? Now, on the macro side of things, external environment plays a big role in what we see. So we talk a lot about worldview in the work that we're doing here in our firm. And worldview is just basically our estimations of the way the world works, and then starting to expect that in our behaviors and kind of rituals and whatnot. So for example, back, you know, when I was growing up, back in the day, right, you don't put your elbows on the table, right, when you eat. Now, if you look at any restaurant, almost everybody, not everybody, but many, 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 many people put their elbows on the table when they eat. And so before, our worldview is that is not okay. That's not polite. And now it's acceptable. Like the worldview has shifted because we collectively have kind of agreed that that is okay. We've shifted away from that. Now, a lot of the attitudes that we kind of collect as a society, that is part of that same thing, right? External factors all work together to create how we, what we believe is right or wrong. And so if you think about, I was actually talking to this HR group at a retreat a couple of weeks ago. And this one woman, she said, you know, when I was growing up, I was told that you need to dress a certain way, that you need, you know, to be taken seriously in the workplace. You need to dress a certain way. You need to wear pearls. You need to wear high heels. You need to wear the skirt. You need all these things or a dress. And now in the workplace, dress comfortably, dress how you want. She works for a tech startup now. And I'm like, here's the crazy thing. You know, 50 years ago, if you weren't a male, you couldn't be seen as a top executive material, right? That was the worldview then. And so there's a lot of external factors that play into what we see as right, wrong, intelligent, right, acceptable leadership material, et cetera. And so exploring that is really fascinating. But I always want to highlight without judgment. If we can do that exploration without judgment, we might be able to identify some pretty powerful things.
Well, of course, we're talking with Eric Bailey. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Holy Shift, changing the conversation about diversity, empathy, and privilege using brain science. And of course, his book, The Cure for Stupidity, which I still say he's going to beat Elon Musk out in the high ranks. I'm telling you right now. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Let me ask you a question. How do you feel about genetically modified ingredients?
Don't like them.
Artificial flavors and colors?
No thanks.
Clean ingredients.
Now that I like.
When you care about what's in things and what's not, shouldn't your vitamins be clean too? Sundown Vitamins are all clean all the time. Non-GMO, free of gluten and dairy, with colors and flavors from real food. We even have USDA certified Sundown Organics and kids vitamins too. When you're living clean, choose clean with Sundown Vitamins at supermarkets, drugstores, or on Amazon.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you, of course, are listening to the HR Power Hour Educational HR Radio. Remember, we podcast on Spotify and all national podcast channels. Please like and share. That's what you're supposed to do. Like and share and make it happen. So today, of course, we're with the one, the only, Eric Bailey. He is the author of the book, The Cure for Stupidity. And today we're going to talk about Holy Shift. Yes, I said shift, ladies and gentlemen. Holy Shift, changing the conversation about diversity, empathy, and privilege using brain science. You know, Eric, we talked about in the first section a little bit about the foundation of brain science in terms of how it works. You know, talk to us a little bit about how you came up with this topic, what was so exciting about it, and what you're seeing as an impact of people understanding this important topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a recovering HR guy. I've sat through so many, and I use the word intentionally, sat through so many diversity trainings in over the course of my career. And they're all kind of the same. They all give you the same kind of language and the needle never moves. And what I noticed probably most importantly is that there's this a lot of people that are pushed out of the conversation, or they're alienated, or maybe even scapegoated in the conversation. Like they're made to feel the enemy. And when I think about how society works, when we're all working together, we get things done faster. I realize that there's probably something to understand about changing this conversation in a way that makes everyone feel welcome and helps everyone take one step forward, no matter where they're starting from, taking one step forward together. And I'm a geek for brain science. And so I do a lot of work understanding what is it that turns people away. And I've got a colleague out of Harvard. His name is Frank Dobbins, and he's written a series of studies called Why Diversity Training Fails. And a lot of it has to do with the understanding of what is the purpose. And so even the word bias, people think it means I'm a racist. If you need to go to, I'm sending you to bias training. What I'm hearing is you're telling me I'm a racist, or I'm a sexist, or I'm an ageist, and I'm going to resent you for forcing me to acknowledge that. And so if we can find a way to change that conversation, redefine bias like we just did in the last segment, right? That's going to invite more people in. And we start to allow people their own opinions in the conversation. That's going to allow more people in. And I found that everybody is, I mean, we're talking about inclusion, right? Everyone's talking about inclusion. Well, how can you practice inclusion if you tell people that there's a right way to think and a wrong way to think? No. We need to invite everyone's opinion in the conversation if we're actually going to be talking about inclusion. So that's kind of where it came from. And over the last couple of years, we've really developed something special, and people responding really well to it.
You know, it's interesting. I was at a conference, and of course, I will leave out the name to protect the guilty. great speaker, very passionate, very excited, and it was about diversity. It was a conversation on diversity. And what resonated from what you said is that there were people in the room that by the time, about midway through, they were segmenting the population. They were doing, in my personal humble opinion, a disservice by segmenting, because you started losing groups. They weren't engaging anymore. Yeah. And so this concept of making sure everybody understands that we have to come together at the end of it. You can talk about history, you can talk about what it is, and you can talk about all the subjects that we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth to all that. But at the end of the day, to segregate and not bring everybody back together doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Right. And that's one of the things that we see, like, you know, right now in our country, we're talking a lot about discrimination, specifically around race. And like, it's a really big problem. If you really dive in and understand where these concepts have come from, it's a bigger problem than we can solve in a training course, you know? And so then we say, okay, well, how do we effectively move the needle in this? Well, is it the people who have been marginalized? Is it their responsibility to do all the work to move the needle? Is it the people who have historically done the oppressing to then move the needle? No, it's a society that has to choose to move forward together. And I think that if we alienate folks or tell people or put people on the defensive, really, then they are more likely to disengage. And the more people disengage from the conversation, the less likely we are to move forward as a society. And so I exactly what you said. Someone hired me last year to do some work with their organization. And they told me about their previous encounter doing a kind of workshop like this. And they had three people run out of the room crying. I'm like, if people are crying and leaving the room, you clearly are doing something wrong, right? Because that's not the goal here. The goal isn't to make people cry. I mean, to feel so offended that they're running out crying. If people want to cry because they maybe had some personal connectivity, they realized something in themselves, great. But it's really about allowing folks to be exactly where they are,
yeah,
and then take one step forward.
You know, it's interesting, and obviously in the conversation we've had in this discussion, we're talking about making the area that where they're going to create and getting together that they can share and have a safe way of doing so that they can have a conversation about, they can be authentic, which I think is the key to any good training, is that there is authenticity involved, that people can share positives, negatives, how they really feel. When you're bringing people together, what you talk about in the book, which again, we're talking about Eric Bailey and the book, The Cure for Stupidity. Tell me a little bit about how you create that safe environment, because by definition, as I walk into this training, Eric, I am already on the defensive, and I don't care what race you are. You are on the defensive walking in that training.
Absolutely. I mean, so I've started to do a lot of studying of what is the specific thing that causes that defensive reaction. And a lot of it has to do with preconceived notions. And so what I do in my sessions is I give people the vent to share whether it's, you know, their own definition of a thing or how they feel when a phrase comes out. And I give everyone a platform to share. And I do it in a kind of a unique way where they have a little bit of anonymity and I'm the only one seeing their responses. And I read them out. No matter what is said, I read it out. Unless it's, you know, terrible, horrible language, but I give everyone voice. And that is one thing that kind of creates this layer of safety. They have anonymity. They see that they're safe when they write what they say, and I give them voice. And now they have a little bit more confidence to be a little more candid, right? And so they start sharing. And so what we do is we say, okay, you know, perfect example, privilege, specifically white privilege, is one of those phrases that kind of gets the hackles up, right? Gets people emotional already because, as you mentioned earlier, this is a big spin in the media, right? This is something that we know is going to get people emotional. So let's keep talking about it, right? Critical race theory, another one of those things, big thing in the media. Let's talk about it because people are going to watch because it's highly emotional. So what I do is I ask people, how do you feel when you hear the phrase white privilege? And I let everyone share their responses with that layer of anonymity. People say the whole gamut of emotions. I feel angry. I feel guilty. I feel like I'm being personally attacked. I feel like I just learned about it. I feel like it's true. I feel like it's false. I mean, everything. I feel the whole range. And then what I do is I say, okay, this clearly is invoking a lot of different emotions across the spectrum. Maybe we should try to understand what we're talking about. Let's try to define it together as a group. And so I walk through, you know, people say, you know, I feel like I've worked hard for what I have. I feel like I'm being personally attacked, but, you know, everyone's saying that I'm given something because I'm white or whatever. So I say, okay, unfortunately, the phrase white privilege is sonically similar to the phrase a life of privilege. Now, a life of privilege is, you know, silver spoon in your mouth, never had to worry for anything, never had to work for anything. Everything's handed to you. That's not what white privilege is. And privilege in this context, it does not explain who you are. It does not mean you haven't had to work hard. It doesn't mean you haven't had struggles. It doesn't mean that, right, you haven't earned what you've earned. Privilege just means that a member of a group does not have to worry about something that a member of another group may have to worry about. So for example, all right, if you're walking down a street and there's a pothole and you sprain your ankle, well, for the next couple of miles, you're walking with a sprained ankle. But because you're a nice human being, you turn around to the people behind you and say, hey, watch out for that pothole. And they step over the pothole. And then for the next several miles, they walk without a sprained ankle. They have the privilege of not needing to worry about walking down the path with a sprained ankle. Is it bad that they don't? No. Right? I'm a parent. My job as a parent is to give my kids privilege, right? I don't want them worrying about the same things I had to worry about. It's not a bad thing. And so you start to think about, okay, if privilege is about lack or presence of worry, it's not a bad thing, right? It's not a bad thing. And there's infinite kinds of privilege. Like I'm right-handed. We talked earlier, I'm right-handed. And so I don't have to worry about where the spiral is on my notebook that I buy at the store. A left-handed person does, or I don't have to worry about smudging the ink as I write, right? That's a privilege. Not bad that I'm right-handed, but then there's like infinite kinds. I'm an American person. There's definite privilege by being an American. I don't have to worry about clean drinking water. I don't have to worry about, you know, there's so many things because we're American that we have privilege. Not bad. Just opening up to, okay, what might someone who isn't me have to worry about that I don't have to worry about? Because there's infinite numbers. Like I'm not a white person, but I have many privileges, right? It doesn't mean that all Black people don't have privilege or all white people have infinite privilege. No. Start to really understand what privilege means. And it can start, instead of stoking shame or guilt or anger, maybe it can get us to this place of what I call radical curiosity and empathy. So what might this person worry about that I don't have to worry about? And it's fundamentally welcoming instead of fundamentally excluding.
Well, you know, I love the term, you know, the curiosity, right? Radical curiosity. I do love that term. And I remember you saying it in your presentation I saw you at. And, you know, that is, if you go back and think about some of the people who say, are you really, truly interested in it? Are you deeply emotionally connected to it? And do you want to really know more? Let's go back to the conversation we had last segment, which was about communication. Mm-hmm. Communication is about truly interested in the other person. And if you really listen to the other person, you in turn will become truly radically interested in what they have to say. Once you do that, you hear them, not hearing them to respond, but hearing them to truly listen. Right. Yes. And it's the same concept.
It absolutely is. It is a beautiful concept. Because I mean, if you've ever had the experience of being truly understood by somebody, it's fun. It feels so good. But unfortunately, it's really rare. You know, we don't have that. Even in our spousal relationships, right? There's so many times I just want to be understood. But when you get that, oh, it feels so good. So why wouldn't we go and try to give that to other people? Right? Imagine our world if everyone around us just felt truly like they would be happy, right? They would feel connected.
Exactly.
And
this
idea of communication to understand the human across from you, that's a fundamental shift in our society.
Well, it's also one that is rare, as you said, and that's the miss. And I think that's probably the hardest part of communication. And even in understanding this whole concept of diversity is that until you truly listen to what the other individual and the other person is talking about and understand where they're coming from and not worrying about your identity during it, and also not being preached about your identity during it. No, it's true, right? In terms of that. Then I think you cannot connect and make that happen. You know, you and I both know watching children is the most amazing thing. They see nothing, right? Uh-huh. We teach them the opposite of what we are naturally born with. Yeah. And that's just the truth from that perspective. So, you know, I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. As we got about a minute left in this segment, what's one thing that the book really talks about that you're so proud of in terms of the diversity section?
It's really seeing people, right? And that's the one thing is we need to see people and understand that the people you're talking with or communicating with have gone through a different life than you have. No matter what, no matter who you're talking to, they have gone through something different. And if you can get to that place of curiosity, trying to understand what it is, you might start to understand why they are reacting the way that they are. And that is a powerful, powerful tool.
We're talking with Eric Bailey. He's got a book, The Cure for Stupidity. We're excited to have him back for the next segment. In just a few minutes, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Don't you love that feeling when you just nailed your look? When someone you barely even know comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love that outfit. Where did you get it?" That's how it feels to use Stitch Fix. They're a personal styling service. Tell them what you love, and they send great clothes for you to try on at home. Stitch Fix is simple. Sign up in just a few minutes. Tell them about the brands you love and the looks that make you feel great. Stitch Fix is convenient. Get everything delivered right to you, so you can try on new styles in the comfort of your own home. Stitch Fix is on your terms and priced to fit your budget. There's no subscription required, ever. Keep what you want and send back anything you don't. So, isn't it time you started nailing your look? Get started today at stitchfix.com. Stitch Fix, personal styling for women, men, and kids. Stitch Fix, personal styling for everybody.
Take it to Moody's Collision Center.
If you call
if you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You want to get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust,
and it won't be a fuss.
Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y.
Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Ferrell-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to Educational HR Radio on the HR Power Hour. Of course, you can go to HRPowerHour.com anytime and download the show, or you can go to Spotify or any other national iTunes or other national podcast channels, and you can check us out and certainly like it anytime and share anytime. We appreciate it very much. We also have a Facebook page. Please make sure you go to the HRPowerHour.com. We appreciate it as well. Today, we're talking with Eric Bailey. He is the author of the book, The Cure for Stupidity. That's right. You heard me correct. The Cure for Stupidity. But we're also talking about diversity training, diversity inclusion, and why it does or does not work and what the best tips are to make that happen. Eric, you know, we talked about in the last segment a lot about communication. We talked a lot about, you know, diversity in general. In the introduction of the book, you start out with saying, to make sure you are all qualified to read this book, let's start with an exercise in reading comprehension. Really? Really? Really, Eric? You have to be qualified to read the book?
Absolutely. Well, so here's the funny thing. That exact reaction is what I'm going for. So the exercise has nothing to do with reading comprehension. It has everything to do with throwing you off, because you're good at throwing me off. So I want to make sure I can throw you off too. And so what it does is it gets people saying, oh, I know what I can read, Eric, come on. And people start to get that their emotions, their ego goes up a little bit. And then we go through the exercise and they get it wrong. I ask a very simple question and they get it wrong. And they're like, no, Eric, you're wrong. And so we go through. And it's really funny because what happens is after that exercise, which is really difficult to do in a book, by the way. So that's why we engineered it that way. But what happens is the ego shrinks a bit. And when the ego shrinks, there's more space for learning. And that's where I want people to be. But we go through our entire lives trying to pretend we know everything and we're smart at everything, we're good at everything. But when we shrink back a little bit, that ego, we say, oh, there might be something for me to learn. And whether it's in the educational space or even, as you said earlier, in a conversation with somebody else, we're communicating. Imagine if we went in trying to learn something from them. Well, we fundamentally show up differently, you know, and we get curious and we say, oh, I never knew that about you. Or, wow, I never thought about it that way. And that's how we really start building these really powerful connections.
You know, you say at the end of the introduction, the illusion of certainty is ever present, trying to convince us that we know everything. If that were true, there would be nothing left to learn. And that's a very powerful statement.
Yeah. We spend our entire lives pretending that we know. And the interesting thing is the more intelligent we are, the more likely that is to show up for us. Because when people ask us questions, we're supposed to know the answers. And so when we think about how we engage with the world around us, or the more importantly, the people around us, especially in the HR space, like if we went in curious, then we might be able to connect with them deeper and then help them change that behavior if that's what's necessary. But that curiosity and connection is necessary to do that.
You know, as we have talked about a lot of, you know, what's in the book, I think one of the things that'd be really helpful is, you know, you got HR professionals listening, you have C-suite, you have owners. We know the demographic of the show really well. Mm-hmm. What are one or two things that somebody could do today, tomorrow, other than, of course, I know the number one, buy your book. But after buy your book, which seems logical, and I would encourage everyone, please go buy the book on Amazon. Absolutely, go get it right away. But excluding that, what is something that an HR, a C-suite, an owner could do today, even one thing that they could do right now to change the way they are dealing with these situations at work?
Ask questions. So specifically, we believe with this illusion of certainty, we believe that we know what is happening. We know what people are thinking. We know what they're going through. And we believe that that is the path to empathy, is assuming what they're going through. And actually, research shows that we are wrong more often than we are right. And the best way to build true empathy and connection is to ask. So instead of saying something like, oh, I know because you're whatever, you're probably thinking this. Instead, ask the question, how are you dealing with this? How are you thinking about this? And you may be surprised at what you get. It may validate what you already thought. But when you ask people, you're actually putting yourself in the position of learner, which is technically a lower power position than the person you're asking the question of. And if you are in a higher power position, and you intentionally lower yourself, that is empowerment. That's when we're empowering people. And people feel really, really good when someone above them intentionally lowers that power position to learner and like, oh, I've never felt that before. And you get people to really care about you and your leadership or your the work that you're doing because of that work. And so the number one thing I always encourage people to do is ask more questions in your day. If you're a person that goes around telling people what to do, I encourage you to flip it and ask questions. Get curious. You're going to see things. Someone said one time we were doing this work, and they said, you know, they finally started asking questions. They got a great idea from somebody. And they said, okay, why have you never shared this idea with us before? And they said, you never asked. And it's like, if you can do that, it will fundamentally change the way that people interact with you and your organization.
You know, it's interesting. Certainly, one of the things that I find is that people don't have a real understanding of their own emotional intelligence, and the EQ, their ability to understand that connection between people, right? That directly, and this is directly related to EQ, even though we're talking about diversity, empathy, and privilege, it's really about the way people connect to others. And whether you're a senior leader, an owner, or a junior, it's how you understand and you ask those questions. And it's tone, inflection, and the way it's asked is really connecting to make sure that you're listening, not just thinking about, well, that sounds good, Eric, but I think not, right? And dampening those aspects of it. So I think taking what you say and amping it to the next level of saying, how do you ask the question? And then what do you say after? So what do you say after that? Once they've answered the question, how do you make them feel like they want to give more?
Ask them more questions. So think about, a lot of times if someone shares something, you ask them a question and they share something that you didn't know or you disagree with, your goal then should be to understand them. Right? So understand the human that is responding to you. So what is it? And so think, what is it in their background that led them to this conclusion? What is it for them in the things that they know or seen that leads them to say this thing? And you say, okay, that's really interesting. I've never thought about it that way. Or actually, I don't see it that way. Help me understand where that comes from, or what makes you think that, right? That line of thinking, or, you know, tell me more about yourself. And what you'll find, if you take the time to engage yourself in them and understand them, they will give you more. They will give you more because they will feel belonging. And when I say give you more, I mean, they will answer the questions for sure, but also they will give more in the business, in the organization. They will give more because they feel understood, because they feel that they are heard and seen. And that is something that unfortunately a lot of us don't feel from time to time. And so you ask that question, understand the human across. I've got a colleague of mine and we disagree fundamentally on all the big issues. We disagree. And I started to sit and understand him and understand, okay, what makes you, what drew you to that conclusion? Help me understand, tell me some stories. And we got there and he has experienced some life that I could never even imagine. He's seen things that I couldn't imagine. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And it didn't change my opinions. It didn't change his opinions, but I understand him better now. And we've formed a tighter bond. And so now he'll even come to me and say, hey, Eric, as a young Black guy, how do you feel about this? And I'll explain it because now he's curious about me. And I'll say, hey, Pete, as an old white guy, how do you feel about this? And he'll explain it to me. And it's like, oh, I wouldn't have that if not for the connection we've made through radical curiosity.
Well, I think the whole point to what you said is the communication of the two, yep. Right? You listened, you opened your ears, you didn't yes. just shut down the answer. And you have two completely different views of the world. But at the end, I bet that you both actually have the exact same view. It's yes. just how you get to that view is Absolutely. Completely different, right? In terms Absolutely. Of making it happen. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. We will be right back with Eric Bailey and his book, The Cure for Stupidity.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetty.
And I'm Pete McVetty from McVetty's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, educational HR radio. Today, our guest is Eric Bailey, and he has been awesome today. We really appreciate it. He's the best-selling author and president of Bailey Strategic Innovation Group. It's one of the fastest-growing human communication consulting firms in the United States. Eric, I got to tell you, if somebody buys your book, The Cure for Stupidity, other than the fact that they'll be smarter for it, what is exactly a real reason somebody should buy it, and maybe what can it do for them?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I used to lead a lot of book clubs at work. At one point, I was running like six different leadership development book clubs. I wrote this book to be a book club book because there are frustrations every day at work at home, on the internet. And if you understand the principles in the book, it will alleviate those frustrations. You will see human where you saw frustration. And that is the thing. I genuinely believe that when you read this book, you will see the world as a better place. It will subside some judgments for you, and you will walk around with less frustration and angst, and it'll totally transform your working and living environment.
I don't know why you wouldn't buy the book then, right from that alone. But I got to tell you, if that hasn't convinced you enough, let me give you a little bit about Eric, right? I think this doesn't necessarily come up in his big bio, but it's kind of in the fun bio. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. You may not know that he's helping NFL Pro Bowler Larry Fitzgerald pet a rhinoceros, right? Doing barrel rolls in an F-16, and he's really cool, by the way. Well, he's chatting with LL Cool J, so I guess he really is cool, on Harvard University campus. You know, Eric, you've done a lot of fun things in your life, right? But yes. Could you get that all together? Could you get a rhinoceros, F-16, and LL Cool J in the same area? Because that, my boy, would be hysterical.
Just I don't know if I could pull that off, but it'd be pretty fun. It'd be pretty fun.
No, it would be great. So tell me about a fun story in your life that got you to the point you decided to do this, because nobody wakes up in the morning and says they're going to write a book. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know, they're going to do all this great stuff and be on CNN and really become a national speaker. What got you excited to do that? Because that would be good for entrepreneurs out there to hear.
Well, so my entire life has been about understanding people. So as a kid, I was the one who, you know, would go to my parents and say, hey, stop fighting. And here's, I think, what you're trying to say. And I was always kind of the intermediary. That's just my natural path in life. And so I realized that one of the biggest problems our world is having is that we're not communicating well. Like I'm saying my thing, you're saying your thing, I'm not listening. And so we want to make sure that we are understanding each other. And I said, oh, if I can make that a career, I might be able to change the world. Maybe not for everybody, but for a lot of people. And so I said, let me do this. And that's why I wrote the book. That's why I started the business. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
That's great. You know, I know on your office wall, you have a sign that says, believe that there is goodness in the people of the world. You truly mean that, don't you?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. There is goodness. And if we do it right, we can be the good in the world.
You know, we appreciate you being on the show today, Eric. It was a fun show today. Look, I hope the audience goes right out and buys your book, The Cure for Stupidity. And if you haven't gone on, he also has a site. What's your site, Eric?
It's baileyinnovationgroup.com or ericmbailey.com.
And you have a podcast you send out as well. What's that all about?
I do. It's called the Cure for Stupidity podcast. And it's actually more on the relationship side. So more on the interpersonal human non-work side. So it's my wife and I. And so we do a lot of work together there.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, of course, you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.